frohe Kunde für alle Fans von klassischen Grafik-Adventures, denn sollte nichts Unvorhergesehenes noch dazwischen kommen, sollten wir bald alle Hand legen können an Beyond a Steel Sky. Entwickelt von Revolution Software, den kreativen Köpfen hinter der Baphomets Fluchserie, stellt Beyond a Steel Sky den Nachfolger zu Beneath a Steel Sky dar, ein Grafik-Adventure, was Mitte der 90er unter anderem für Amiga rausgekommen ist, wo ich es selber gespielt habe und damals sehr viel Spaß daran hatte, denn das Sci-Fi-Adventure mit Cyberpunk-Anleihen, das hatte eine interessante Story, ein paar coole Rätsel zu bieten und vor allem ein echt eigenständiges Design, was unter anderem von Dave Gibbons gemacht wurde, dem Zeichner der Watchmen-Comics. Wir hätten euch natürlich gerne was live auf Rocket Beans TV zu dem Spiel präsentiert, aber da wegen der aktuellen Lage klassische Entwicklerbesuche bei uns nicht mehr so direkt möglich sind, haben wir den Spieß einmal umgedreht und ich durfte bereits in eine frühe Beta-Version selber reinspielen. Das Game erscheint nämlich auf Apple Arcade und auf dem PC und darüber hinaus habe ich ein kleines Interview führen dürfen mit Charles Cecil, dem Chefdesigner von Beyond the Steel Sky und auch Chef von Revolution Software, der ja schon häufiger bei uns auf dem Sender live gewesen ist. Und dieses Interview, das dürft ihr euch gleich anhören. Dazu gibt es ein bisschen frische Footage für euch aus dem Spiel, damit ihr euch selbst einen Eindruck machen könnt. Ich bitte, die Soundqualität zu entschuldigen. Das klingt natürlich alles ein bisschen besser, wenn man direkt im Studio beieinander sitzt. Aber davon wollen wir uns natürlich nicht aufhalten lassen. Viel Spaß mit dem Interview.
Wait, I know that U-Chip. Oh my, is it really? Yes, it is.
First of all, I was quite surprised to hear that there will be a sequel to Beneath the Steel Sky, which was a game which I used to play on the Amiga in the 90s, which was a very fun adventure game. Of course, your forte, because you're doing a lot of good adventure games. But I had the impression this is kind of a one-off, or so to speak, a franchise that's a bit left behind in the past. And how did it come about that you revived it?
I've stayed in touch with Dave Gibbons. We wrote the game at the time back in 1994 with Dave. Dave, of course, is the co-writer, the co-creator of the comic book Watchmen. And I got in touch with him at the time, and I was thrilled when he said that he'd love to come and work with us in Hull, in the north of England, on the game. And we kept in touch, and I'd like to think that we're still friends, and have been friends and remain friends. And we kept talking about the fact that we should do a sequel. And I think what happened was that there's still so much passion for the game. When I go to conferences and I talk about it, a little cheer will go up when I mention Beneath the Steel Sky. And it felt like it was still as relevant today in many ways as it was back in 1994. And I met up with Dave and we were talking about things. And we said, this was about 2 or 3 years ago. We said, it's about time we wrote a sequel, isn't it? And the big reason that we can do it now, but couldn't before, is the ability to self-publish and the ability to communicate directly with our audience, which is incredibly liberating. Both commercially and, both creatively and to an extent commercially as well, because instead of having to go through the publisher, instead of having to go through the retail, we are able to keep control of all of these elements. And Dave was very much up for it. And so we were very keen to write a game that both appealed to the original audience of Beneath the Steel Sky, but also went to a much wider audience. And one of our key elements is that people don't need to have played the original game to enjoy Beyond the Steel Sky. And that was very much the philosophy on which we based the development and the design of the game.
I had already the opportunity to play a little bit of Beyond the Steel Sky, an earlier build here for about an hour. I didn't quite finish it yet because I like to take my time with adventure games and not try to rush it, because I remember back in the day you don't have solutions on the internet, so you have to try and try around a little bit. So you said you wrote it originally, so the gist of it back in the 90s. How did you have to adapt your vision from back then to make it into a playable modern adventure game? Because of course, if you play it nowadays, it doesn't look like a game from 94. What did you have to change to make it work nowadays?
I very, very much hope you enjoyed the game. But what our core ambition was to make it feel contemporary, but to be unashamedly an adventure game. And our very first game, as you mentioned, was called Lure of the Temptress. And we created the system that we call Virtual Theater, which was revolutionary at the time. And that was the idea that characters would walk around the world, they would talk to each other, they would exchange information. And that was fine, but in a 2D environment, the problem was that when they left, then the player had no idea where they were and could wander around aimlessly until eventually they'd bump into them. So while the theory was good, the practice was very difficult in that 2D environment. So when we wrote Beneath the Steel Sky, I was very keen to bring the idea of virtual theatre forward. And a couple of our characters, one of our characters, Gilbert Lamb, actually wanders around the world. He takes the elevator, he goes down to his apartment, he comes back again. And the fact that he's moving around the world makes the gameplay and the world feel very dynamic. And that was very much what I wanted to bring forward. But the advantage of being able to move to a full 3D world is that within these arenas, you can have characters walking around doing their own things. And in doing so, the player can track exactly where they are and they can see what the results of subverting the world are. So what I want from Beyond a Steel Sky is to set up a series of arenas throughout the game, throughout the city, because obviously you will get into the city, and the player can subvert the behavior of the characters either by directly interacting with those characters or by hacking the world. And the solutions then emerge from what the player does and how the characters behave. Because ultimately, with a point-and-click adventure, you are limited in what your puzzles can be. You've got an inventory, you've got background objects, you use a background object, sorry, use something in your inventory on a background object or on a character. And what I liked the idea of was using all of those mechanics, but layering them on top of this idea of virtual theatre and hacking the world, so that you have a broader range of puzzles that can emerge from these gameplay tools that we use.
That was the impression I had also with this thing about arenas you're talking about, especially the first location you are and all the people are wandering around and you're having to find them a little bit to see what they're currently up to. What kind of unique things do you think you have to do with an adventure games nowadays? Because we had the renaissance of adventure games a couple of years ago. They became in fashion, so to speak, again. So a lot of old series came back. But nowadays, of course, this is also about 10 to 15 years ago. So maybe they could feel a little bit old-fashioned now. What you're doing gameplay-wise or that can lure new people in?
Okay, well, I mean, one of the reasons that I think that the comic book style was desirable was because, unlike most genres, in an adventure game, a player will spend a lot of time looking at the background because they're looking for elements that will be relevant to the gameplay. And so we were keen, both from a gameplay perspective, but also from a visual aesthetic, to create a game that could look like an animated comic book, and that any particular frame would look of a quality that might appear in a comic book. So it very, very much our objective was to complement Dave's comic book look. So we developed technology, Toon Toy technology, specifically to create this comic book look, which I hope makes the game feel contemporary, and I hope makes the game appeal to a broader audience than would be looking back at the traditional adventure. We took great. I'm a huge fan of games, of a number of adventure games that actually move into 3D. And so I felt that that, you know, with the Don't Nod games, you have, you know, this proves that there is an audience for full 3D adventure games. And certainly talking to our fans, I got the sense that a lot of people who play the traditional 2D games are very happy to play 3D games and vice versa. So, as I said, we were keen to move the paradigm across to 3D, but without alienating our hardcore fans. And that was very, very much our mission and our objective.
In designing the world, of course, the characters and the visual, you talk, of course, about Dave Gibbons, and you can especially see it in the intro sequence, which is this big motion comic depicting the events up to the playable part here. So are you wanting to do more auxiliary stuff outside from the game? So have a package version, have a real comic book in there by Dave, or do you planning stuff like this time around, or
is it digital
stuff?
So it's nearly 5 years ago. It's 4 years ago. Revolution had our 25th anniversary. And and maybe you'll sympathize. I remember when you bought a box and it was full of really cool things. And I think particularly I remember Ultima 7, I think it was, where you'd open the box and out would come, you know, stones and maps and booklets and things. And I was really keen for the 25th anniversary to do the same thing. But now for Beyond a Steel Sky, we have even more scope. I want people to be able to buy the box and be really excited. In fact, a friend, Jochen, gave me an LP, Kraftwerk LP. And it was the first time I'd opened up an LP for probably 20 years. And it brought back the joy of opening up a package and knowing that you're going to listen or watch or play, but also the accompanying material. So yeah, working with Dave gives us the plenty of opportunity to put in tons of materials that hopefully will make people very happy when they open the box.
This has been quite some trying times now with all the people having to shift over from working together at the workplace, and especially for a game studio where you have so many people to be around each other to get creative together. This is, of course, a very difficult thing to translate to being able to work from home. So how are you dealing with this? Can you keep up working on the game? Do you have to adapt? How's it working for you?
Well, actually, we're extraordinarily lucky because we are coming to the end now. We're reaching the end of production. And so direct face-to-face contact is a lot less important. It would have been critical six months ago. But of course, we asked everybody to work from home as soon as the government recommended it. And people are. I'm still working in the studio. So I have a lot of space all to myself. But thankfully, none of our team members got ill. They're all working very efficiently. We're lucky in this city because we have fast broadband. So, of course, it does require an overhead in terms of setting people up, in terms of maintaining elements. But it's not disastrous by any means at all. It will add to the development time, but not by a huge amount. So we're very lucky. And as I say, thankfully, all of our team have stayed well, which of course is the main thing.
Yeah, that's the most important thing, that you stay healthy and will be able to finish the game when it's working out for you. So do you have an idea when it's coming out, or a rough estimate, or are you saying now we're working towards the finish line and then we see from there?
Well, do you know what? We're working towards the finish line. We haven't got that much. We haven't got that much longer. But the problem is that I've been working in development for long enough to know that if you set a date or set expectations and then you miss them, then everybody gets very upset. Whereas if you don't set a date and expectation, then you can have a much easier life and you can sleep better at night without the risk, knowing that you risk disappointing people.
Okay, Charles, so then let's say we wish you good luck and that you'll be able to finish the game on your own terms, and that the people can revisit again the world of Steel Sky with Beyond the Steel Sky. I'm looking very forward to it, having played already a little bit of it. And yeah, if the opportunity arises, then you're welcome in Hamburg, and then we're going to take a look together to the game.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Good. And do finish it off. And if you have any feedback, then I would love to hear from you. Thank you.
Yeah, I will. Thank you very much.
So, und das war's mit dem Interview. Vielen Dank nochmal an Charles und die Leute von Revolution für die Gelegenheit. Zum Abschluss meine persönlichen Eindrücke zum Spiel. Und ich muss sagen, ich habe durchaus Spaß mit dem Anfang gehabt. Habe so ein bisschen gebraucht, um reinzukommen, weil ich spiele zwar immer noch sehr gerne Grafik-Adventures, aber das ist eben auch ein Genre, was natürlich sehr viel Tradition hat. Und ich finde heutzutage, du musst auch schon Fan von Grafik-Adventures sein, weil das ist nichts, was du jedem an die Hand geben kannst durch das langsame Pace, durch das erstmal Stück an Stück Kennenlernen der Charaktere und der Welt, der Spielmechanik und so weiter. Storytechnisch hat es mich zu Beginn noch nicht ganz so gepackt. Ich fand es cool, die ganzen Figuren und die Welt wieder zu sehen, die wir vor über 26 Jahren verlassen haben nach Beneath the Steel Sky. Aber da gibt es noch so viel, was ich natürlich noch nicht weiß, wo die Story hingeht, mit welchen Figuren mal zusammenkommt, sodass zumindest ein bisschen Interesse aufgebaut werden kann. Das eigentliche Highlight war eher für mich eben so die typische Rätseleinbindung, die Kombination, dass die NPCs durchaus auch mal eigene Pfade hatten, wo sie rumgelaufen sind, sodass die Welt nicht ganz so statisch gewirkt hat. Und ich persönlich hatte auch echt viel Spaß mit diesem PC-Umprogrammier-Feature. Man kann da Computer hacken und einzelne Programmbauteile so umbauen, dass sie für die eigenen Zwecke dann agieren. Und das gab mir nochmal so eine gewisse andere Note, die ich nicht in anderen Grafik-Adventures gesehen habe. Ansonsten aber, hey, es scheint auf jeden Fall ein solides Erlebnis zu werden. Und als Grafik-Adventure-Fan sollte man zumindest das Auge offen halten. Wenn es da ist, werde ich länger reinspielen, es vielleicht sogar durchzocken und dann eine konkretere Meinung dazu haben. Bis dahin aber vielen Dank für das Zuschauen. Wie gesagt, danke nochmal an Revolution und Charles für die Gelegenheit, das zu machen. Und viel Spaß mit dem Rest hier auf Rocket Beans TV. Ich war der Gregor und ich sage Tschüss.